Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
All right, you all know the drill. When your number is called, step forward and repeat the phrase you've been given. Understand? Number one, step forward.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What up, Bankstown? Hey, how we doing? It's The Usual Suspects on a way back Wednesday. Before you ask, we don't know. So just, we've had a lot going on.
Things have transpired.
Yes, but the good news is, my broadcast partner is back with us.
What's
Nick
up?
Has transferred from the blue chair to the production chair.
Yeah.
And I don't think he crapped in it before he left.
I thought you were doing the show for Palillo. Did you? Oh, that was yesterday.
Yesterday.
You
did the long deal yesterday.
Yeah. Wow. How'd that go?
It wasn't that bad. I mean, as soon as Joel walked in, I felt relieved.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did
because
explain
I mean,
that?
I mean, it wasn't that bad, meaning me solo. The show that we did together, I felt like was a lot better.
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, he said I picked up the energy from the minute that I came in the room and that we started the show.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, the decibel level.
Never experienced that. I'm just messing with you.
Okay, here's the deal. Why don't you put your headsets on and turn it on high? Let me know when it's there, and then I'll re-what up H-Town. And we can just take it from there.
I appreciate y'all covering for me yesterday. That
yeah,
was very
man.
Kind of you.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. That's what we're here for, man.
Yeah.
So a lot of people were concerned. We just said, hey.
Personal stuff.
Yeah, personal stuff going down, but that we expected you back today, so we're glad that you are. However, way to add some drama to it by texting us up to the last minute. Waze says I'm going to be there at 1 o'clock. So essentially, you were 5 minutes later than you normally are.
Oh, I deserve that. I definitely deserve that. Fair, accurate, and balanced.
There you go.
Sir.
When I saw that text, though, I was like, man, Waze has been glitchy on me. It's been a bit inaccurate lately. So
here's what's crazy is every time I tell you guys, hey guys, I'm probably going to be late or right at one or whatever, I end up making it on time. Yeah. So I have this almost ritual where if I think I'm going to be late, rather than just showing up and be like, I made it at 12:57, then I just text you guys and tell you I'm going to be late because I know how the universe works now. If I tell you I'm going to be late, I'm not late. So I just put that out to the universe and let them handle it. And sure enough, again, it was, I said, 1 o'clock, what did I get here? 12:57? As I opened the door, it was 12:57. So thank you, universe, once again. Barry wasn't late.
A lot of people call it U-verse.
That is totally different.
Oh.
U-verse is always late.
Okay.
If I was going to be leave it up to U-verse, I'd have told you guys I'd have been here between 1 and 4 p.m.
Yeah.
Because that's how U-verse does it. So.
Yeah, and then they show up at 5.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's what
or they show up next Thursday.
I've dealt with that.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. So, did you peep the game last night?
I did. Some of it. I ain't gonna lie. I took a sleeping pill and called it a day. It was not fun. So, I did watch some of it. I did not get to see Verlander get tossed. That's about when I fell asleep.
Nick and I were in the lab up until about 10 minutes ago as we were dissecting everything.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot to dissect on that.
Okay.
So we can get to that because I think first and foremost, safe to say, not what anyone was expecting that game to be.
No. I will say, I was thinking about it on the way in, that's how you blow a Cy Young.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. That's how you blow a Cy Young and win a Cy Young all in the same game.
But he got into the sixth, four hits or less, no runs given up. It's okay. I mean, sure, you expected him to go longer and get more strikeouts, but at the same time, ERA doesn't get tagged.
Yeah, but those are the games you got to win. Those are the games
he got to win.
I'm talking about Charlie Morton.
Oh, Charlie Morton. Oh, for sure. I think he's out.
No, yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, that game cost him the Cy Young. If he had any chance of winning a Cy Young, he could have went out and shut down the Astros yesterday, beat Justin Verlander, and said, I am legitimate Cy Young material. That did not happen.
Okay, I thought you were talking about
Verlander. I thought you were talking about Morton, too, but I didn't know for
sure. I was talking about Morton, yeah. He cost himself the Cy Young yesterday, and Verlander might have won himself a Cy Young just by dueling Charlie Morton and getting the best of him. No, and I know you don't want to hear that because you're all on the Cole train.
Yeah, Garrett Cole's got that thing in his back pocket. Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, yeah, no, I think that Charlie Morton could have gotten back in the conversation with a great performance last night.
Shut him out.
And beat. He gave up more runs than he's given up all year.
Six, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could have given up more. And you wonder if it was an emotional thing because he doesn't seem like a very emotional guy.
He's not.
But I was thinking about that. Like during the day at the hotel and whatever, is he really like juiced up about the fact that this is a huge game for him? Or is this just another game where he's just trying to go about his business? But either way, he just didn't seem like his normal self. He didn't have his normal control.
Well, they said pregame, they showed a video while he was out in the outfield stretch doing long toss.
Okay.
And they did a thank you tribute to Charlie Morton, and the fans gave him a standing ovation. And not being an emotional guy, they said it was the first time they've seen him because he took his hat off and he pounded his chest and he waved to the crowd and... So I think that meant something to him.
Sure.
Did that affect how he pitched? Probably not. Here's the thing, though. When you're facing a guy like Charlie Morton, and this theory is half-cocked because I know they faced him already once before. Nope. Don't.
Didn't have to drop him, Nick.
Nope. See? Half-cocked is a word. Okay. Not. I hate you.
That's because you get sometimes you get Brad in the minor leagues and sometimes you get him in the major leagues, and that's when you're half cocked.
Back on what at the end of March,
yep,
he pitched against the Astros, 5 innings, 2 earned runs. That was at home. So maybe the emotion did have something to do with it because one of my first thoughts was, well, maybe they know something about Charlie Morton. And they're able to tell from his, he's got to tell, and they know it, and they picked up on that. But that's not necessarily true because he pitched well. But maybe him being in front of the fans this time around had something to do with it. I'm not sure. They know the guy. They know his tendencies. Why they couldn't get to him the first time in March, I don't know. But this time around, boy, it did not go well. It did not go his way. And you feel bad in a way?
In a way, right?
I mean, that's CFM. That's the World Series hero for this team.
Now, instead of booing Andrew Luck when he walks off the field in the preseason game, that's the way a fan base is supposed to act. When you get and Nick and I talked about this a little bit yesterday, but when you have a guy that has indelibly left his mark on a franchise because of what he did while he was here, regardless of where he went afterwards or when he left, that's how you treat a guy that has done you good. He has done you right.
Yeah, this from the same city that booed Matt Schaub when he got hurt. I was proud of him.
Yeah, they've come a long way. We're proud of our little child for growing up a little bit. But definitely, regardless of how and why they learned a lesson, it was fantastic to see because that's what I had hoped for. And that's what I expected, quite honestly, because of the fact that you can crap on Matt Schaub because he was good, never great, never got you where you needed to go.
Right.
But you can't crap on a guy that not only was a solid starter, but in Game 7 when you needed him, came in and was just lights out for you to get your first World Series title.
No doubt. And I'll be honest, probably people aren't going to like what I'm about to say, but that's okay. I didn't think that it would go that way simply because I feel like there's a core part of this city that's really heavily invested in the Astros and know, the World Series and all that and appreciate guys that have moved on.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like a lot of these Astros fans that we see on a day in, a day out basis are, I'm not going to say bandwagon because I use that too much, but fringe Astros fans, kind of very surface level Astros fans and don't really know. So it wouldn't have surprised me if there were a lot of fans in the crowd last night. They were like, who's Charlie Morton? Why is everybody making a big deal out of this? But then they see the video and they're like, oh, well, we should stand and clap for him now. But I guarantee you, if they hadn't have run the video, would he have gotten the same ovation? The core group of fans that would have been in the attendance probably would have, but a lot of them would have been like, what is this for? I don't understand it. That's just my And I just, I could
and,
be wrong.
Yeah, and I respect, I disagree with that simply because of the fact that I think, you know what? I think before 2017, you had a lot more of the fans you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I think now there have been, for a three-year period, a lot more fans are more engaged. And they, you know, they can identify. Used to be you probably couldn't name probably more than seven or eight Astros. But now people can identify with them. And I think the two guys that can always come back to this town and will be received favorably that have left recently are going to be Charlie
Rasmus.
Going to be Charlie Morton and going to be Marwin Gonzalez.
Oh.
Because Marwin, again, if you don't have that home run in the World Series off of Kenley Jansen, you're not probably winning the World Series. So I think those two guys who did what they did for the franchise when they did it will always be remembered fondly.
You don't think George Springer's on that list?
He ain't gone yet, buddy.
But I'm just saying, he might be.
I'm saying, I prefaced it by saying two guys that have left recently.
Oh, okay, okay.
That have left a mark that has been so strong that they will always be remembered and honored fondly would be those two guys.
Okay, I can't believe you didn't have Jason Castro on there.
I mean, that dude, he was the
Rasmus,
honorable mention.
Hank Conger. I mean, where
Conger for
where
the
have
dance,
all the Cowboys gone?
Conger for the dance.
Colby
and,
Rasmus
and Colby
for that,
Rasmus for that, the
streak in October.
The
remember
Colby
that?
Jacks.
Yeah,
and all
when
that.
He did nothing all year. Well, not but man, for some reason he got hot in that first series.
Yeah.
What, 2015?
And the hair.
Yeah, the hair.
And the hoopty.
The celebration.
That he drove
and
to the games.
And yeah, the glasses.
That he was a fan favorite.
Yeah, he was.
He just wasn't a fan favorite at $17 million a year.
No.
So they moved on.
No.
But no, I think, look, I think the fans handled it well. You know what? I didn't expect the game to go that way, but I was pleased with the fact that they took care of business. The offense was great. So
I didn't expect the game to go that way either. Do you feel like, though, that Yordan Alvarez has to give one of those home runs back?
I knew people were going to start questioning the one off the position player.
You kind of have to, though, don't you?
He even felt like he came back. Well, old boy from Cincinnati did the same thing. In one of those games where he had all the ding-dongs early, he got one off a position player. So, but you could tell when he crossed home plate, was walked back towards the dugout, he was like,
don't high-five me.
What am I supposed to do?
This
I mean,
is cheap. Don't high-five me.
I think they said it came in at like 59 miles an hour, and he...
It probably left faster than it came in.
But I'll say this. One thing we didn't talk about was the opposite side of things is when you could take a batting practice home run off the scoreboard that actually knocks out a quadrant of the scoreboard.
Yeah.
You know that you're capable of hitting it off of whatever speed it's coming in.
I think seeing him kind of get back on track a little bit, go 3-for-5 and get that. He had that double that drove in a couple of runs. I think it drove in some runs, right?
Yeah. Well, he had a 3-run bomb.
Yeah. And then the double. Who was ahead of him?
Was it
Bregman that ended up on third?
He had a three-run
bomb.
First double. Yeah, he hit the one into the corner.
Yeah,
and then he hit the home run.
That's the good thing is that he's looked like he struggled a little bit, but he looks like he's back on track. And Josh Reddick, if he can
that's
get his back on again, if he can at least be somewhat productive from the bottom of that order.
Well,
that's
again,
good, really kinda, good news going into the playoffs.
You say the common fan. The common fan saw him go like 0-for-1 for in recent games, but like Blummer was pointing out, and if you've watched the games at all. The outs that he was making, he was tagging the ball on the barrel. Yeah, he was hitting it hard. So, you know, he was due to have some things change. Look at Bregman. Bregman had two balls in the infield and one Texas League bloop single last night. But in the box score, he had three hits.
Everybody got a hit, at least one hit. Everybody scored at least one run except Josh Reddick. But he did have an RBI to make up for it. So,
there you go.
Yeah.
So it's a way back Wednesday, and since we were all kind of scattered, we decided quickly before we came on the air today that we would try and make it songs about breakups because of the fact that it looks like it's inevitable that Clowney and the Texans will break up. So Nick picked his favorite song first, Tony Braxton's Unbreak My Heart, and we'll go from there. If you have suggestions, please bring them our way.
And my list is in.
There's that bus that goes right over you. Joel just threw you under there.
Your list is in?
Yeah.
Did you email it?
I did.
You okay, dirty right. bastard.
See, Barry, why don't you get in behind that bus driver's seat? You can take the next drive.
No, you know what? He actually bailed us out by doing that, so appreciate that.
And he picked a song
He bailed y'all out.
No, actually, I have another list of available songs.
Neither of you decided to come up with a Way Back Wednesday theme while I was out. I'm obviously the glue here.
We came through.
Barry's back.
You did come through.
I don't have your list.
You did come
through.
And don't
act like both of you have sung this song in the car.
Never.
Love this song.
I disagree
song
with you.
Sucks.
Joel, you would totally sing this song.
Love this song.
No, the Tony
Great.
Braxton song from Boomerang is better than this.
Love Should Have Brought You Home last night? Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, that's exactly right. There you go. Hey, if you want to know what we're talking about and get in on a conversation, 713-780-3776. HRP Listener Line. You can call that number, text that number, or you can hit us up on Twitter where it's at Barry is Funny, at The Producer Nick, at Pac-Man Joel with a K. We look forward to you being suspects through the next 3 hours of the show and every day right here on ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, here we go! Nick doing the slow version of Way Back Wednesday breakup songs. He's got slow our number version. One.
It's a good-ass song.
Another good-ass song.
I think last time I chose this song, y'all roasted me, so I'm glad you've come around.
That's possible. It's very possible.
I like this
song.
But
now that
care.
It's on my list, it's a fantastic
it's okay.
song.
I'll sing this song in the car with the windows up or down.
I feel like Joel don't would care. Sing both of the songs that I played.
No.
Oh, he totally would.
No. Tony Braxton?
Yeah.
Tony Braxton more than this one. Although this one's cat. It's okay. But okay. Tony Braxton, I'm just me.
Boy, your standards are very high.
You darn right they are, buddy. You learn that more every day. So, okay. Ooh, I found another good one.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, you're doing your list
right now.
Yeah, cool. I'm just gonna wait till the third hour, and then I'm gonna say in your ear what I want you to play.
I emailed you guys a fantastic list of available
list?
Songs.
Okay.
Oh, did you?
Look at us. Teamwork makes the dream work, fellas.
What are you, sick?
Right?
Yeah, I'm not used to this side of you, Nick.
I like it.
So our number one is Nick List. Not Nicholas, it's Nick List.
See?
Had to do that. Okay, so we were talking about the Astros before the break.
You good with JV getting tossed for what
That's
he did?
That's what we really got to get into. Because, Nick and I were talking about it. Nick found a video where they break it down. They actually do subtitles on what was said between him and the umpire. And I think the main point that I came out of it with is the fact that if this is a 2-1 game, if this is a one-run game, I don't think Verlander is as demonstrative or vocal, and I don't think it gets to that point. But I think that because he knew he had a pad and he knew that this was kind of a trend all game, he just – it's one of those deals where a pitcher has pride to say, I made the pitch that I wanted to make and I thought I got him at 2-2. And when I didn't get him and then I give up an extra base hit, it ticks me off. And I think he's professional enough and a veteran throughout his career that's smart and savvy enough that I don't think if this is a one-run game, he does that.
He said, I like that he said, I turned my back, expressed. He's like, we went back and forth. I didn't think it was a ball. He didn't think it was a strike. We went back and forth. I turned my back and said one more thing. I probably shouldn't have used bad language, but I got run. And he's like, you know, he needs to understand it's an emotional game. Bro, I get it, and you're competitive, but you're up 9-0. You gave up a double. Mm-hmm. As many home runs as you've given up this year, who cares? It's one double. You're not losing this game. You know, even if that run scores, your ERA is fine. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you acting like that? Now you probably cost yourself the 3,000 strikeouts this year.
That is one thing that's going to come into play, yeah. For sure. I think you're right.
He only had 4 at the time.
Yep.
He only had 87 pitches. He could have at least gone one more inning, maybe picked up a couple strikeouts.
He wasn't going to get it. For all those people that thought the streak would have continued of 10-plus, he wasn't getting it last night.
No
he just
way.
Wasn't. He wasn't in that kind of zone. And like you said, with the pitch count where it was, he might have gotten a couple more, but that would have put him at like 6. There's no way he's getting to 10.
Yeah, because he was at 87 when
he
got tossed.
Right. So, I mean, I think that's the other thing. But I think that you look at the whole scenario and the way it all went down. And to me, the other thing is he keeps going back to, well, my back was turned. And the broadcasters said, you know, basically the umpire could have turned and gone back behind home plate. Instead, he kind of sought it out. Well, the bottom line is the play's still going on. When all this dialogue is happening, the ball is being retrieved from the outfield and he's trying to see where it's coming in. So I think that the only thing that I would say is from an umpire's perspective, you get the fact that they had their exchange, he turned his back, but I don't toss him until after the play is the ball's ruled.
Yeah,
time is dead.
Out, yeah.
And you look at him and go, look, Justin, I've had enough.
You're out of here.
You said it, and I said it. We're done. And if he says one more word after that, then I toss him. But the fact that he tossed him while the play was still going on.
That is weird.
That was just a little different to me.
Yeah. But, you know, turning your back doesn't make it okay. That's the weird thing about sound is you don't have to be looking to somebody for them to hear you. And if you say something that's inappropriate or that an umpire doesn't like, doesn't matter if you're making eye contact with him or not. He's going to throw you out.
That's what Joel was kind of saying. If it's within ear distance, it's fair game, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, well, that you knew. Guys know what that line is. Every major leaguer, especially if you're Justin Verlander, you've been around as long as he has, you know what the line is.
Mm-hmm.
You absolutely 100% know. And you start using language and being demonstrative. Those are things that are going to get you run. And that's why he said, I probably could have cleaned up the language a little bit. Yeah, I get a little emotional. Well, okay, but you know that if you argue balls and strikes, it's been like that in baseball for years now. You cannot argue balls and strikes or you get tossed, period.
Yeah, and I felt like it was something, it was batters earlier in the game that kind of accumulated his
that's true.
His anger. Because when you look at the K-zone, and I was telling Joel about this, the ones that I felt like he got upset right before that fam hit that double, like if you look back on the replay, depth perception difference considered, it did look like it kind of went over the plate. But if you look at the K-zone, like the graphic on ESPN or MLB.com, it was way outside. And so that particular at-bat may have just been the final straw for Justin Verlander because the frustration was clearly growing with the umpire throughout the game.
Yeah. Well, that's fine, but at the end of the day, you just, whether you agree or disagree, if you argue balls and strikes, at some point you're probably going to get run, period. And if you know that and you're cool with that, then it doesn't matter if it was legitimately a ball or not, or a strike or not. Just voicing your opinion gets you run. So, I mean, I hope it was worth it for him.
Yeah, and again, we both kind of touched on it. But the fact of the matter is, you knew you were going to get a win. You knew that there wasn't really anything to risk. But I think that, you know, if you're going to make a point like that, that's fine. But I think, you know, there's better places for that because you already know that you're in a good position. Just walk off the mound. And if there's a certain point when you're done for the night, then if you want to ride him a little bit, go ahead. You know, if you're going to stay in the dugout like he likes to do, you can take your shots then. But I think you could have gotten an inning or two more out of him.
Yeah.
As it is, look, it got so out of hand that you could have pitched a position player. But
yeah,
at least you didn't have to rely on a bullpen that still looked kind of crappy.
But exactly.
I'm glad you agreed with me. All right, so we've got a half hour to go on the show. We still got plenty more on the agenda. We've got some issues coming up again to discuss. We got to get your take on Jadeveon Clowney and the fact that
John Gronostradamus.
Yes, yes. We gave Granato plenty of props yesterday for that one, and so did the national media. So that's something that we still can discuss. We've got lots of other things on the table. And if there's something you have on your mind you want to get off your chest, 713-780-3776, HRP listener line. Call, text, hit us on Twitter, usual suspects, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
You know, I actually have thought of this song several times working with you two guys. Wanted to let you know.
Very well done.
Thank you very much. Second half hour of the show, The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Open up with a little Astros, obviously, because there was that pitching duel last night, or at least it was supposed to be.
Real quick, let's get Barry's analysis. Go ahead.
What do you want to know?
Ah, see, we didn't catch him in time. He was
chewing
away.
Who brought the kolaches?
I don't know. Word on the street, Eric Sandler had some pizza down the hall, too, and my ass didn't walk over there and get it.
I'd like to know if the word on the street was, did he have it yesterday or today? Because I walked in that door yesterday, and there were two pizza boxes there full of pizza.
Oh, you're trying to say Eric Sandler's giving us
old
pizza?
No, I'm trying to say that maybe some savvy enough leftovers to realize that pizza sat for 24 hours.
See, I don't think our food critic would do something like that. I think you're throwing him under the bus.
Really? Because when I came up the elevator, he was leaving. So maybe it was a hit and run. He left them and left and said, well, if those people still want to eat that food the second day, I'm not taking responsibility and I'm out.
I'll ask Eric. We'll get to the bottom of this.
He was on a dead sprint on the way out of here. Maybe not. Okay, I maybe fabricated that part of it, but he was definitely on the way out when I was on the way up the elevator. So I'll throw that out there. So we didn't get to you yesterday, sir, for a lot of obvious reasons that we pointed out, but I want to get your take on this because the whole clowny thing is seemingly coming towards resolution one way or the other, but there was all kinds of rumors. Granato was the first to break that it looked like, one, he was going to fire his agent, Bus Cook, which he did. Two, that there was renewed interest with the Miami Dolphins, that he had met with Coach Brian Flores and other high-ranking officials with the Dolphins. There's a another report out there from who's our Aaron from the Chronicle, Nick?
Wilson?
Aaron Wilson said that he'd rather prefer to play for either the Seahawks or the Eagles. Obviously, we have drummed up conversation about the Redskins. Your take on everything yesterday?
It's I don't know that saying he doesn't want to be with the Dolphins would make sense. You don't go and meet with a team if you don't want to be with them.
Well, at least you're exploring it, but you don't have to be jazzed about it.
Well, no, but that's different than saying he doesn't want to be a Dolphin, because I saw a report that was like, oh, that's off the table. Well, you don't go meet with a guy.
That's what I said yesterday.
Yeah.
I thought that was a team he wasn't trying to go to.
But yeah, so that's why I say you get erroneous reports, and I think he's interested in anyone that'll pay him. At the end of the day, I think he wants to be paid.
Well, they're saying he won't sign the franchise because then the Texans dictate where he goes. He's not signing it so he can have a say-so.
Right. Well, because right now, because he's essentially a free agent right now. Mm-hmm. And he's not under contract, so there's no tampering. He can go talk to people. He can negotiate. He can say, hey, you know, I'll sign the franchise. You guys extend me or work out a deal or whatever. What's your long-term plans? Are you going to make me one of the highest paid defensive, linemen? Or he don't want to be tagged as a linebacker, obviously, but so I think he's got that leverage, and firing his agent is part of that. I think he wanted to have something done before the season started, so I find it all interesting. My big takeaway is, though, that the Texans obviously feel that he's not worth it to try and figure this out. Mm-hmm. And to me, as a fan, you have to ask yourself, do you agree or disagree? And then you go from there, and, do you think that he was worth it? Is he worth the money that he's demanding or asking for to be paid like the Aaron Donalds of the world based off of a year and a half to 2 years of solid production? Not even great. Not even, his sack numbers weren't great as his tackles for a loss are. And he's definitely stout in the run game. But you would have liked to see more production from him from getting after the passer. I never felt like he was prolific at that. He was good, but not prolific, not the kind of money that he's demanding, at least. I think Jadeveon Clowney is good, but he's not great.
I don't think he's as good as he thinks.
And he hasn't been good consistently.
And you know how I felt about this from the get-go. I said he hasn't done anything numbers-wise to say that he should be in the same category as Aaron Donald and Mac. He, to me, seems to lack the work ethic. And like you said, I've been big on the whole lack of consistency. So for me, the bigger thing is I completely agree for the first time in a long time. I agree with the Texans' move to say I'm not going to give him the kind of money he wants.
Yep.
But then my question becomes, what is a good return on the investment and trade? I don't think just getting, because the rumors are out there, just a third-round pick. I don't think that's enough.
I've seen the rumors for Laremy Tunsil, their left tackle, and I'm good with that.
I would love to have that happen. Nick and I talked about it yesterday, but the thing is from the reports I've seen, is the Dolphins they're not interested in doing that. They're all interested in doing a pick and maybe a little extra, and I don't think that's enough. I would do Tunsil in a heartbeat.
That would be more ideal for the Texans. If they get Tunsil in the deal, I think that would make it ideal. I think getting a pick it might look on paper, it might look like it's fair, like if you're looking at it objectively from the outside in, but if you're in a win now situation, or if you're if you feel like you're close, like the a lot of people feel like the Texans are, then you don't do that.
Well, and the thing is that the report I saw was that the Dolphins weren't thrilled or enamored with having to give up Laremy Tunsil. But you know what? In order to get a guy like Jadeveon Clowney, you're going to have to give up something. That's how this game works, right? You've got to fill a need, and you've got to give up something that fills a need for the team you're trading with. And right now, the Texans don't need draft picks as much as they need somebody to keep Deshaun Watson alive.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if I'm the Texans, I say, hey, you know what? You guys, the Dolphins do have leverage because they know we're in this position. And Jadeveon Clowney has some leverage because they know we're in this position. But either way, we planned on playing this year with a crappy left tackle and no Jadeveon Clowney. So, Clowney, if you don't want money, then don't sign the tender, and you can lose out on all those game checks. And the Dolphins, if you don't want Clowney to bolster your defense, then fine, keep Laremy Tunsil. And we'll continue with the path that we planned on being on all along.
Because I'm saying, and Nick and I talked about this too, I said, look, the bottom line is a draft pick does you no good for this year, and there's a lot of riding on you performing this year.
Especially with Luck retiring. That changed the dynamic.
With that division and now it being wide open again, and the fact that Bill O'Brien is still trying to make statements to prove his value, and whether he's interim GM or not, moves like this mean more because of the influx of the situation at general manager. And then you decide, well, we said all along, and we've said this for how long now, offensive line is the number one priority. But if you're not going to get Tunsil, then I don't think Stills is the guy you want, because you don't need to bolster your receiving core. You just got to make sure your receiving core stays healthy. Now you look at secondary. Well, you know, they're probably not going to give up Howard. They just gave him a boatload of money, and they said made him one of the top paid corners in the league. And you know that Flores is trying to create a culture in Miami of, I want players that are going to suit the way I want to play with my mentality. So I want guys that I want to have my stamp on that I'm bringing in. So with that, what you're bringing in, who are you getting rid of? Who you want to get rid of? Do you want to get rid of a running back that could possibly do some things for the Texans? That's the other group I'd look at. But I'd go in line of position groups that I need something from and then say, hey, either this guy, or this guy. I don't need Stills.
No, I'm with you. I don't know why that became a thing where you have wide receivers. In fact, if they can stay healthy, you have three really good wide receivers that all bring something different to the table. You can't predict injuries, and you can't just assume that they're not going to be there. I mean, I know what the track record says, but...
And somebody said Kenyon Drake, but the thing is, when you look at their depth chart, they got nothing behind him that's worth a darn, so there's no way that I think Miami even sniffs that either.
Yeah, I mean...
So you take Howard out of the mix, because I think you agree with me. He's not going anywhere. They just signed him to a long-term deal to make him one of the top paid corners in the league.
Yep.
I don't think they can afford to lose a Kenyon Drake, because they don't have anybody behind him that's worth enough to carry the running game for them. Stills, I don't think the Texans are interested. So it starts with Tunsil, but where does it go from there? Someone said, well, you throw in Kiko Alonso and a third-round pick. Does nothing for me.
Well, what's funny is Kenny Stills isn't even their best wide receiver. I mean, they have Devontae Parker. Mm-hmm. Alan Hearns is probably, I would say, as good as Kenny Stills. So you're going to take their, you know, second or third guy on a depth chart?
Plus,
and
he's
give
a kneeler.
And give them Jadeveon Clowney?
Stills is a kneeler, so you know that doesn't fit the culture that they've created over there.
If I'm the Texans, I try to take some of this leverage away by saying what I said earlier, which is fine then. Don't get paid, Clowney. And you know what, Miami? Keep going with a horrible defense. That's fine. You guys do that, and we're going to move forward with what we've been planning to move forward all along in a weak-ass division that we can probably still win.
And if you play dirty and you say, well, then fine, I'll come in and I'll sign it. Well, guess what? If you sign it, you go on the field and you crap the bed, well, then your value just went way down for you to get the kind of money that you think you deserve.
Yep.
So we'll see how this all plays out. We know people are stacking up. They want to talk a little bit about this Clowney deal, and we can talk about it with you, as well as many other things. So we look forward to you being suspects and joining the show. Either text, call, or tweet. Back with more. It's the usual suspects, ESPN 97.5. But to walk away, I am no
this is ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
R-E-P-C-E-T. What, you know. You know how to spell it.
What?
That's an Eddie Murphy line. Nick has hour number one way back Wednesday. Boy, we can put a list together quickly when we need to. That was well done on your part, Nicholas. Mine is also in. Barry's will be in it sometime after
2:55.
I'm just going to forward you the one that Nick made.
It's really not that good of a list. I was kind of exaggerating.
All right, so for
it's
the break,
an okay we're... list.
Your list sucks.
My list
so
is
before,
amazing.
For the break, we were talking about this Clowney situation.
Yep.
And we've got a lot of people on Twitter chiming in as well. We had someone say, let's see who it was. It was Kevin who said, why doesn't Clowney sign the franchise tag and wait to see if O'Brien gets fired after the season? Quite frankly, he doesn't do that because, one, he risks injury on a short-term deal, which would screw the whole thing up. And secondly, why play in a place where they don't want you, obviously, as opposed to forcing a trade to a place where you do want to go? And when you don't sign it, you have the leverage to kind of be involved in dictating where you go, as opposed to if you sign it, then you're at the mercy of the team that doesn't want you to send you wherever they feel.
And another year of, you know, being unhappy and, like you said, not wanted. And
then Clarence said, what if he fired his agent, Buzz Cook, because he got in his head saying he should be paid like a top guy when he clearly wasn't? Well, we talked about it yesterday. I compared it to the Scott Boras Dallas Keuchel situation where – one way or another, they had a conversation where either he just had the notion going in that he was worth what Donald and Mac made, or maybe Buss was giving him information to say that he was. But when it doesn't come to fruition after a conversation like that is on the table, then something's going to change, and it did.
Yeah.
So you know what? And like on the flip side, Keuchel signed a 1-year deal. Probably wasn't happy about it. But they'll go around and around again and see if they can get something done. And for now, Scott Boras has maintained his relationship with Dallas.
What does Dallas's numbers look like? Well, I don't want to get us off track.
Yeah, we'll get back to baseball. But DJ Hollygrove has been waiting patiently. He wants to get in here on Clowney. What's up, man?
My question is to you guys. I heard some of you guys' thoughts on it. What do you think will actually get the deal done as far as him going to, you know, either Miami? I know he said he wants to go to either Seattle or Philly, but what do you guys think that the Texans should do to make the deal go through? Because obviously they're not happy with him. He's not happy here. You know, I'm not a Texans fan, but it's just, you know, I'm here. So it's just crazy that we're having this so much back and forth between these players and these teams. So what do you guys think the Texans or maybe even Miami should do to make the deal go through? I'll hang up on this.
Hey, appreciate it, DJ Hollygrove. Thanks for calling in. Yeah, I think that there's got to be compromise, and you have to it's hard because if the Dolphins are like, look, man, we're already kind of deficient at quarterback with Fitzpatrick, and that's probably going to be who starts for us right now. And so you know, you want to protect him, and Laremy Tunsil is a quality left tackle. And I don't know that there's a compromise to be had with a team like the Dolphins. If you were dealing with someone like the Redskins, and I know we keep bringing that up, but here's the thing. You would say, what does it take? Well, Clowney has to be happy with the team he goes to. That's number one, because they're not going to get a deal done. The Texans and Clowney aren't coming to an agreement right now. Maybe a few years down the road, but it's just not going to happen, and Clowney doesn't want that. So you can just forget that. Now it's just about where is he going to end up. So take a team like the Redskins where you have some maneuvering, where you can say, well, give us the left tackle Williams. And then the Redskins like, nah, we don't really want to do that. Okay, well, how about AP and some draft picks? Now you're negotiating and both teams can benefit because you get a backup running back in AP who could take over if you don't feel like Duke Johnson is the guy that could be your every down back or at least your first and second down back. And you get some picks in return. And, you know, and then now obviously Clowney has to be happy with that. But that's what it's going to take is it's going to take a team that you can negotiate with that has some compromise in them that fills needs that you have.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the key is the fact that someone that can deal with this rationally. So a team that doesn't come in and just think, well, I clearly have the upper hand because they have to unload this guy. So I'm just going to staunchly say I'm not giving up anything more than a draft pick.
But you got to take that approach to start if you're that team.
You don't have to.
I mean, you got to see how desperate the Texans really are.
Okay, if you think you're the only team in the game negotiating with the Texans, maybe you take that approach. But when you think, if there's any kind of inkling that there's several teams involved, now you really can't do that because now you risk losing a guy that obviously you want on your team. So you say, look, let's try and do this. These are guys I'm willing to talk about. These are guys that are completely off the table. Texans could say, this is a deal breaker for me. If you're not willing to consider this, then we're not going to talk. If at least one of those guys, they'll say, okay, we'll at least we're open to discussing that, then you know right away, to Barry's point, that you can go and progress. But if there's that brick wall that you're getting stoned on that, then you go, no, you know what? Then I'm going to go talk to Team B and Team C and see if either one of them. Because obviously Washington has the assets that the Texans not only want, but they really need. More so than, say, the Dolphins other than Tunsil. Because it seems like the Dolphins know who their top players that they're going to hang on to are, and they're not going to budge. And again, we're all dealing with the media and the rumors and the people that say, you know, there was a report yesterday. The Dolphins, everyone's on the table except for Tunsil or Howard. So with that being said, what good does that do the Texans then? Then why are they in a hurry to make a deal?
Right.
Now, why don't they just wait it out and say, look, from a Clowney's perspective, you're going to get antsy because you don't want to lose that year of service. And you do want to make sure you get that money, because once the regular season starts, you're losing about $1 million a week. And I know that Clowney values money enough that he ain't going to want to lose $1 million a week. So he'd rather get this deal done before week one. So now you go, is there anybody else out there? And you just, as the general manager that's selling, you want to know, how many teams am I dealing with? And then you want to use one team against another until you find a team, like Barry said, that's legitimately engaged in trying to make a fair deal. And if the Texans say right off the top, I'm not taking just a draft pick, that's not going to do it for me, who's in? And you figure that out.
Yeah, the part of the problem is, like, a team like Miami, if you do get a Laremy Tunsil, they don't really have anything to, as a back. There's no depth there either.
Just like Drake.
Yeah, so that's going to be part of the issue. And that's why, again, I say if you're negotiating with a team, it'd be good if you had multiple points of negotiation to be able to deal with. You know, like if there was somebody, if there was somebody, maybe the Chargers had that, you know, if they were maybe willing to move a right tackle or, you know, something like that, or somebody in their secondary, then you could talk Melvin Gordon or a secondary player or whatever. Those are just, I'm just throwing these out there, but that's what I think is going to make this a lot easier. But unless you get just some crazy haul and picks, okay. I mean, if the Dolphins are willing to give up a 1 and a 2 for Clowney, oh, I would do that.
But they're
not going to do that. But I'm just saying, there's a draft pick package that they could put together that the Texans would say, oh, hell yes, we'll definitely do that. Because the Dolphins are going to be bad this year, too. And if you got their, you know, next year's 1 or 3 or something like that, I'm not suggesting this is going to happen. But what I'm saying is, the right package is out there for picks. They're just, I guarantee you, the Dolphins don't see Clowney as that valuable. They're trying to get him at a decent price and not have to overpay for him, which is the whole point that the Texans didn't want to do. They don't want to overpay for him. So
now, I mean, and of the teams that he wanted to go to, they're kind of heavy in position players that the Texans could be interested in too. But the guy that they should have gotten in the first round that they didn't, if you want to say, okay, you give us Andre Dillard, we'll give you Jadeveon Clowney. Now, you're saving face in two different ways. One, there was a guy one pick before you that went that arguably everybody said was the best left tackle available. And you skipped on him for a guy that you drafted to play tackle that's going to end up playing guard. And you're giving up the number a first-round pick that happened to be the first-round number one pick in the first round. But you're getting back a first-rounder, in essence, by getting a guy that fills a need that's also a previous first-round pick. So you save face if you're Bill O'Brien. Now, if you're Philly and you want to do that, because Philly's definitely said they're interested in Clowney, if that's the kind of deal you want to make, because they've got a pretty good offensive line already, and like you said, Barry, they got some depth, that's great. But you can see why Miami wants to give up Stills, because as you said, they got Parker, they've got guys that
Allen Hurn,
yeah. They've got guys that have NFL experience that can play the position. So if they lose one, they're okay.
Yeah.
So
we'll see as the world turns with Jadeveon Clowney. It's going to be interesting.
But the time's ticking. The clock's ticking. I mean, here we are, final week of the preseason. And like I said, Clowney's not going to want to lose game checks starting with week one, especially if they're at about $1 million a pop. The Texans want to get someone in here as quick as possible that can try and help them to fill several needs that they have to fill between now and the start of the regular season, because they know you know they have to find a running back.
Mm-hmm.
You know that their offensive line is in flux and they've got so many different issues with that they're going to be scanning the waiver wire and talking to teams about potential trades where they can at least get better than less than average in a lot of positions. So, and then the other thing that we haven't even talked about yet is when Clowney goes, how do you fill that void? To avoid JJ getting doubled on every single play, at least when you had those two guys, one on each side,
guys like Merciless are going to have to
step up
more pressure on the quarterback. Yeah.
Or, there you go. There's going to be more decisions to be made at the end of next year.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got some baseball talk and some football talk out of the way in hour number one. Still have plenty more to get to. But if you want to join the fray, 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line, you can call, you can text, you can hit us up on Twitter. Hour number two is right around the corner. Usual suspects, ESPN 975.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.